Welcome to Keys to the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk about the Kingdom of God. What is the Kingdom of God? What is His Holy Church? What is His Church? These are things that we use, these terminologies that we create in our languages in order to identify ideas, concepts, precepts, organizations, institutions, entities, what have you. We put names on these things. We put them on. The name is not the thing. The name is what we use to identify the thing. Whether it is a proper name or a common name, a common noun, it's simply an identifier for our sake to communicate about that thing. Words are symbols of ideas. That's what, that's a quote from Samuel Johnson. You'll find it in the book Covenants of the Gods right at the beginning. Language is deceptive because a symbol of an idea depends upon the definition of that symbol in the minds of those who use it. Every word you use has more than one definition. That creates confusion. That makes all language babble, because you will become confused listening to almost everybody, because everyone has a slightly different definition of a word. Every word that is defined, it's merely defined with other words, and so therefore you can get bogged down into thinking you're understanding somebody and he means something maybe completely different than what you're hearing, because his definitions vary. If I say the word God, what does that mean? Well, the supreme being, well, there are gods many. When we see the words Elohim translated into God, we see the word Theos in the Greek translated into God. Those are different words in those languages. Elohim and Theos didn't necessarily mean exactly the same thing at the same time to everybody who's ever used those words. We look at that word specifically, actually meant ruling judges. It was used to address judges in courts of law at the time of Christ, both Elohim and Theos. This is why the emperor of Rome was called the Apotheos, or Apotheos, because he was the appointer of gods throughout the Roman Empire. Not all the gods, not all the judges and magistrates, local magistrates and judges were often picked in different ways, sometimes appointed by leaders who were elected, sometimes they were actually elected by the people. But they were ruling judges. They were judges in courts of law, deciding disputes between parties, and they were called gods, because they were the ones who were really sovereign. They were the ones who made the law often. In the United States, supposedly the law is made by the Congress and Senate, and even the executive branch must sign things into existence as law. And so now men are under 7 million laws, at least 700,000, I don't know, there's so many I can't even keep track of how many laws, and yet we have Christians walking around saying we're not under the law anymore. Well, hey, you're under so many laws you can't even count them all. So you are under the law, because when they said that the citizens of Judea and other converts to Christianity were not under the law, they were talking about those statutory laws of the Pharisees. They didn't mean that they were not under the Ten Commandments anymore. If you violate the Ten Commandments, that's built into creation, that you will suffer the penalty of it. It's built in. You cannot escape it. If you don't honor your mother and father, your days will not be long upon the land. You'll end up not owning your own land. You'll end up subject to other fathers of the world. You know, the ones that Jesus said, call no man on earth father. He was talking about those fathers that you will become subject to if you do not honor your mother and father. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean if you don't go to bed on time, you're going to end up subject to other governments? No. The word honor means to fatten. People have absolutely no idea what they're reading when they're reading the Bible, whether it was a good translation or not, simply because they do not know the meaning of words in the context that they are being used by the author. The authors were writing in a period of time of history. Understanding that the reason there are God's many is because there are many magistrates and judges throughout the empire. Some appointed by the apotheos because they were federal or imperial judges, and some appointed or elected by local officials or congregations of citizens because that's the way they did it there. Who were the judges in Israel? How did they become judges? Were they elected? We have these books called the Judges, and this is before the king. And so who were the judges then? How did they come about? Well, judges usually were these Levites. Now, immediate cases were handled within the congregations of the people, the 10 families that gathered together. And they settled disputes. We saw it with Boaz. The elders got together. That's the head of each family got together, and they sat as jury and judged the law. They knew what the law was. It was written down. But they had to know how it applied in this particular case. And that takes people to say, does this fit? Does that fit? Well, in modern language, when we read the Old Testament, we really get far away from what they were depending on because we have a completely different interpretation than those people did early in the Tanakh. And when they were reading the Pentateuch, they got a different impression than we do today because they had a different understanding of the language. By the time Christ came, the Pharisees had interpreted the Bible completely different than many, many, many other of the Judeans and others who were Israelites at the time. They had created a system that was actually diametrically opposed to the precepts of Moses. We have to remember Moses and Christ were in agreement. That's very important to understand, but if Moses was in agreement with Christ and the Pharisees were not, then the Pharisees could not be in agreement with Moses. And so therefore what the Pharisees were doing based upon their reading of the biblical text, men who spoke Hebrew on a day-to-day basis, they had it wrong. They were completely confused about what Moses was telling us, what Abraham was telling us, what the prophets were telling us. They had come to a completely different conclusion, reading the same book that others were reading. The Essenes were preaching things very similar to what Christ was saying. And they figured that the Pharisees had it so completely wrong that they would not participate in the animal sacrifice that the Pharisees were doing on a daily basis in the temple. They wouldn't even participate. Now, they worked in the temple daily. They were an extremely popular group of people. They were not homogeneous in the sense that they had a number of different ideas, but some of the common threads of ideas was they did not swear or take oaths, which is why at that time they didn't hold hardly any political offices, because they had come to a point where in order to hold political office you had to take these oaths. Jesus had the same thing. He said, swear not. Not at all. A number of other things throughout the Bible lead us to believe that Jesus and the early apostles had a close relationship the Essenes. Some of the apostles were probably Essenes. Essenes didn't call themselves Essenes. They called themselves a number of different things. The word Essene actually probably means best guess. There's over 70 different interpretations of what the word and where the word Essene even comes from. You don't find that word in the Bible, but one of the definitions of what they believed the word meant was healer. And, of course, we know that one of the apostles, at least, if not more, were called healers. You know, we translated doctors, but that's a quirk of the language again. So anyway, in the second part of the show, we're going to talk about how we can become a part of what Christ was doing back then now. We're going to talk about the work of our latest endeavor, which is to start local networks that are connected all across the country and around the world. This has been a huge project, very time-consuming, dealing with groups all over in different states around the country. And it's very important. It's very important that these local groups begin to act and work together to figure out the complexity and overcome the confusion that has crept into modern Christian thinking so that we can actually understand what Christ was doing, how it related to God, how it related to what Moses was doing, how it related to Abraham. Now, I've seen lots of questions coming up on lots of different state groups that are actually answered in the books Thy Kingdom Come and the Free Church Report and the Covenants of the Gods. Now, I understand that people will read these books and still have questions, and I understand that people will read these books and forget what they read or not understand what they read, and I'll take the responsibility. Maybe I haven't made things clear, but I wrote these books in a certain way. Covenants of Gods is written different than Thy Kingdom Come, and it's a style of writing that is very seldom seen today. It's almost poetic. It's quoting. You quote, when you read quotes, especially if you read poetic quotes or rhythmic quotes with a particular meter of the quote, and it's very subtle how this works. You use a different part of your brain to do that, and then use another part just to read technical information. And so constantly in the book The Covenants of the Gods, you are using different parts of your brain as you're reading the book, and it's constantly taking you back and forth. I mean, some people experience that when they go to read the book, they become extremely tired and want to go to sleep. I mean, it's like you are when you're on the road and you're driving and driving, and all of a sudden you just got to pull over and rest for a minute. And that's okay. When they wake back up, they can start reading again. But the idea is that it's actually a mental exercise taking place when you're reading the Covenants of the Gods for many people. Now, everybody's a little different, so it works different with other people. Now, the book Thy Kingdom Come, it's written very much different. It's more like storytelling. There are certain parts to get into technical information, but we try to keep that to a minimum and just go through and tell the story from Abraham to Constantine and beyond. But we're trying to paint a picture with the different chapters and the different little stories that you find within each of these chapters. And there's a progression of events, so you can see how people are corrupted, how they come out of that corruption, what Abraham was doing at the beginning. Now, the Free Church Report is, again, written very much differently. It's like a jumbled series of essays, and I'm not completely convinced that we have the jumble quite as it needs to be, but that's going to take me locked away on the desert somewhere for a couple of days, going through that one essay at a time. And there is a method to that, too. And we're trying to open your eyes to more of the structure of how the early church operated, which is how early Israel operated, which is what the altars of Abraham was doing. And so so we touch on a lot of different subjects. It's quite iconoclastic. It knocks down certain ideas that we have previously accepted. It tries to polish away our perception of certain events that took place in the Bible, certain ideas that were in there. In the second part of the Free Church Report, we actually go into and describe the government of God and how it would operate. Now, if you don't understand how governments operate today, you may not see the contrast between the two. And this is one of the things that we're bringing out in the network. And I'm always amazed at how people don't quite get it, you know. But then I understand, too. It's like I've gone way down this road, and now I'm coming back to help other people find their way down the road. And I'm always kind of amazed at the fact that they can't quite see where they're going. They can't quite see, you know, what seems so obvious to me because I've gone farther down. But that's where I have to become patient and long-suffering and repeat these things. But I can't keep repeating them one-on-one, explaining these deals, these concepts, these precepts one-on-one, because I end up being up till 2, 3 o'clock in the morning trying to explain these things and get on the phone for hours with one individual and try to explain these things, which is why we're making these recordings. But there's so many different levels to this, and even Christ, you could see, was having the same difficulty talking to large crowds, but he's only talking in parables. And even his apostles say, why do you keep talking in these parables, these stories? Why don't you tell them the details? And he says, it's given unto you to know, but not unto them. So right away we understand that there's a class of understanding. It doesn't mean that they're not saved. It doesn't mean that they're not valued to the kingdom. But there's certain things that are on a need-to-know basis. Now, all those people who know on one level may on another day know on another level. But right now, they only need to know on this level. And so that's the level that Christ is talking to them. And that's certainly going to be the way it is when we talk to large crowds. Because large crowds are made up of a multiplex of kinds and people with a certain levels of understanding. They're still learning, or they only have a capacity to understand certain things, or they only need to understand certain things right now to act upon. Later on, they may have a deeper understanding or a greater understanding, but nobody gets it all. So that's part of the process. So what are we doing with this network? How is this working? How is it supposed to? Are we a cult? That was a question that's come up recently, and that's what I'm going to address, a number of questions that have come up recently, and so that we can maybe answer many people at one time. Is His Holy Church a cult? Well, you know, I read the definition of a cult. Somebody was talking about that years ago. This was a cult or that was a cult. And, you know, it's commonly, you know, the Jehovah's Witnesses are a cult, the Catholics are a cult, but if you're in a particular church, that's not a cult. But you know what the definition of a cult is? It is the first definition of a cult. A particular system of religious worship, especially with reference to the rites and ceremonies. Well, that doesn't sound that bad. I mean, of course, it depends on what are those rites and ceremonies. And we actually go into that in the polity of the church. Now, our rites and ceremonies, you know, who else has ceremonies? Well, the United States federal government has a whole office and branch of their government that's in charge of the ceremonial pomp and circumstance of meeting diplomats, meeting people of heads of state, having state dinners. There's a whole system of rules and etiquette that must be followed so that they have their ceremonies. We have ours, too. Our ceremonies, our rites, our procedures have a purpose, and it's the purpose of Christ, to set men free. bring men so that they may serve the God of heaven and not those gods many that Paul was talking about, that people become snared by because of what should have been for their welfare. What should have been for their welfare has become a snare. In other words, like Peter says, they have been made merchandise, human resources, to bow down and serve other men who rule over them. You know, in our book, Rome Versus Us, which you can get on the net, real short, we reduce these down to the basic essentials, but there's enough evidence there to clearly show you that George Washington was a god. Yes, he was a god. The U.S. government website states that this painting raises Washington to the rank of God. What painting are they talking about? The one that's in the Capitol Dome of the United States government building, or shall we call it what it is? Temple. The Temple of Herod was a government building. The Capitol building of the United States is a temple. It's where you put your faith, electing benefactors, or men who call themselves benefactors, but exercise authority one over the other. Now, Christians were told not to be that way, but yet Christians vote all the time. But are they really Christians? Have they repented? Have they turned around? Are they following the ways of Christ? They're electing men who call themselves benefactors, but exercise authority. They go under their authority and have to bow down and serve them. So how is it that they are Christians? Because Christ said it is not to be that way with you. But it is that way with you. You bow down and serve these men, and you do it so that you can receive benefits from them that are supplied by they going to your neighbor and forcing your neighbor to contribute to your welfare. And see, if you apply to a system like that, then they have the power to force you to contribute to your neighbor's welfare because you think it's okay that they force your neighbor to contribute to your welfare. You see, that's how you are in bondage. It's because you sold your brother into bondage to serve your own welfare needs. Another definition of cult is an instant of great veneration of a person, ideal, or a thing, especially manifested by a body of admirers. That sounds like Jesus Christ and the apostles. And that's, you know, if you met the first definition, that would qualify you as a cult. If you met the second one, that would qualify you as a cult. The third one is the object of such devotion is called cult. The group of sects bound together by veneration of the same thing, person, or ideal. Now that's Christianity is a cult. Democracy is a cult. A group or sect bound together by veneration of the same thing, person, or ideal. American flag. We all venerate the American flag. We're all a cult. Are we bound together? You see, this idea, oh, well, that's a cult, that's a cult. I don't know hardly anybody that's not involved with some sort of a cult. So is His Holy Church a cult? You can say that if you want. It's a misnomer. But you can say it. Anyway, when you come back, we're going to tell you what His Holy Church is, what His Church is, and what the Living Network is.
You're listening to FirstAmendmentRadio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Since the beginning of time, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, it has been borrowed, it has been purchased, it has been stolen. There's a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and to our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188 or visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, and regular guest, world-renowned economist Robert Chapman, right here on FirstAmendmentRadio.com at 4 p.m. Eastern or 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, 1-800-375-4188.
Now listen to me. The Bible says, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. I want you to know that a corporation is Caesar.
Government takeover of the church. This DVD is the most powerful tool we have for waking up those asleep in the pews. The scripture calls for his people to come out of her. The corporate church is the apostate church, the whore that rides the beast. Get this DVD for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Make copies and give them away to your corporate church friends and loved ones. The truth will make them free. They will watch the DVD, Government Takeover of the Church. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com or call 559-781-3773. Who will tell them if not you? Have you seen Loose Change, the most popular documentary in the 911 truth movement? With the coming change in government, now is the time to push for justice and get this truth into the hands of millions of Americans. First Amendment Radio is offering both videos, Loose Change and 911 Justice on DVD. We will ship two copies of both videos to you for $10 cash. Yes, two copies, one for you and one for you to give away. You will see and hear Larry Silverstein admit that they decided to pull the building. Why are they not being pursued? The people must know. Justice must be had. The time is now. Two copies of both videos, Loose Change and 911 Justice, for $10 cash. No checks, please. To First Amendment Radio, 139 East Tulare Avenue, Tulare, California, 93274.
Okay, welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. We were talking about, is His Holy Church a cult? Well, what is an occult? By the definition of the word cult, I think the really dangerous thing or aspect of a cult is when it binds people, because it talks about binding people to the veneration of a particular leader. You talk about binding people to the veneration of a particular leader. Well, Obama, who is the president of the United States, which is another government, is venerated by all kinds of people. Now, some of that veneration is an emotional veneration of Obama, where people, I mean, literally look upon him as some kind of a messiah to save them. Some of that veneration is involuntary, because people are bound in other ways, because he is one of those men who call themselves a benefactor but exercise authority that Christ was talking about. He is the president of the unrighteous mammon, which is unrighteous. Mammon is entrusted wealth, but it's unrighteous because it forces the contribution of the people. It has snared the people by offering them benefits, you know, and people have sat and eaten with those rulers and been men of appetite. And they have eaten deceitful meat, which have brought them back into the bondage of Egypt, where they are merchandise. Now, I'm using terms that we see in Peter, where he talks about they would make merchandise of you through your covetousness. Well, how do they do that? Well, you wanted those benefits that were provided by these men who call themselves benefactors but exercise authority. Now, this is a very clear violation of biblical principles. The Essenes at the time of Christ would not receive such benefits. They would not be participators in those benefits. Christ certainly said not to. You're supposed to be praying to your Father in heaven, not to your Father in Rome, or to your Father in Israel, where, or Judea, which was men like Herod the Great. He was the father of the nation. He was thinking of himself in those terms and talking about himself in those terms. And even, you know, Rome was beginning birth registration at this time. It wasn't absolutely mandatory for another 130 years under Marcus Aurelius, but it's one of the major reasons that Christians were persecuted, because they would not register their children within 30 days at the registrar's office to obtain a birth certificate. Why did you need a birth certificate? To obtain the benefits, the free bread, and other benefits that were passed out by the government to appease the people and to bring them into this enfranchised citizenship. Same thing went on then, same thing goes on now. The problem is today is that Christians think that they're actually following Christ and they're becoming participators in the system. So what are we doing to, in our cult, these rituals and ceremonies, our rites and ceremonies, doing to counter the effect of praying to those men who call themselves benefactors but exercise authority? What are we doing to counter the effect of covetousness that is bringing the people into bondage, that has become a snare, that is making people merchandise, human resources, bringing them under the God's mini of the imperial powers of the United States or New Zealand or Australia or wherever you happen to be, because every country follows this same procedure. Now, there are some that are just flat-out dictatorial powers, but even China has a one-child contract where you sign up to get extra benefits, and then if you try to have another child, they will force you to have an abortion. I knew someone who had married a girl from China. He had gone over there year after year and bought things in China and brought them here to America. This is many, many years ago, and sold them because he could get them so cheap over there. And so he would go there, and he had to actually go to the factory. He lived with a factory manager or owner or whatever he was, and he was selling sewing machines, leather sewing machines. And so the guy made these sewing machines. He made sure each one was inspected by him and boxed up in crates by him, loaded eventually on a truck by him, rode with the trucker all the way to the harbor, loaded it onto ships, and then let that ship set sail, flew back to America, and then when the ship came in, he made sure that all of his sewing machines were unloaded. Then he would spend the rest of the summer selling those machines to people, advertising them around. This is before eBay and Craigslist, and making a profit because he got them so cheap. You know, I mean, he paid even to pay all his expenses, he was able to do that because he had got them so cheap. But the point is the factory, I think he actually was an owner, as much as anybody's an owner today of any business that they have. And he had like a dozen kids, from what I remember. I don't know, it seemed like a lot of kids. He had a lot of brothers and sisters. So where's the one-child contract? Well, he was successful enough that he never bothered with it. He never went and got the benefits, and therefore he could have more than one child. You see, people are bound by these applications because these applications are a part of a contractual relationship that we create with government. This is what the book The Covenants of the Gods is all about. This is why in the Ten Commandments we're told not to make covenants with them or with their gods, because it brings us into bondage where other men become God over our lives. So anyway, In this idea of rites and rituals, which we talk about, and that definition of cult talks about, what is a rite? That's something a lot of people don't understand. We're talking about R-I-T-E here, not R-I-T-H-T. Another part of the confusion of language. a formal or ceremonial act or procedure prescribed or customary in religious or other solemn uses. Rite of baptism. Well, what about the rite of marriage? In your church, what is the ceremony, the customary religious practices and procedures of getting married in your church? Well, in most churches I see today that call themselves Christian churches, part of the rite and ceremony of that church is to make sure that the members of that church are bound under corporate civil law by the filling out and submission of a marriage application and therefore a license to get married by the state. Now, one of the very first chapters, or the very first chapters of the Covenants of the Gods, is holy matrimony versus marriage. Marriage has become a term today to mean a state marriage. In essence, it doesn't mean that, but in reality, that's really when you say marriage or marriage license or permission to marry, you're talking about permission by the state and entering into a three-party contract with you, your spouse, and the state. And if you don't believe that, just go and look up Holy Matrimony versus Marriage on our website, hisholychurch.net.org.info, and read it. The chapter is there. The whole chapter that's in the book is there, and you can read it. And the fact is, the state say it, the bar association say it, it's a three-party contract. Now, somebody asked me, what is canon law? And so we're finally getting around to some more of the questions that were asked. And this is part of this same answer, dealing with what are the rites and ceremonies of your church. Well, canon law is not like statutory law. It's not like, it's similar to common law, but it's usually written. And lots of churches have canon law. The Roman Church has canon law. Greek Orthodox Church has Episcopalian churches that have canon law. And they all vary a little bit, but they're all based on some basic precepts that have come down. One of the things that they say in canon law is that the minister or priest or reverend does not marry the couple. They marry each other. It's not a three-party contract when you get married in church under canon law. It's not a civil contract. If you went to get married in the Vatican, you would not get a civil marriage certificate. You'd be married. But you have to go outside the Vatican, and there's an office outside the Vatican that you go to this. Specifically, a lot of people like to go to get married in the Vatican. And they go outside that to get married again under the civil law of Italy. And because Italy is a signer of the Hague Conventions, while the Vatican is not, you can then take that marriage license and certificate that you get from that civil authority and take it to and get an apple seal on it, and then you bring it to the United States, it's immediately accepted. But what's accepted is the fact that you're under the civil law, and if you have a divorce or a dispute in a particular state like Idaho or Montana or Minnesota, they are going to treat that union as this three-party contract between you, your spouse, and the state. And they're going to use their laws on that subject to bind you. And moving from state to state will change which laws bind you, because as you become a resident of that state, you become subject to the laws of that statutory body. Now, that's not always the way it works. Holy matrimony is that just that original union between you and your spouse in the sight of God, and the church does not enter you into a three-party contract. The church is there to help you with disputes, but you have to enter into the court of the church and decide and agree to either binding or non-binding arbitration. And you could agree to non-binding arbitration, and they just try to work out the differences of disputes between you and your spouse. Or you could say, well, I really trust this guy's judgment. I'm going to enter into a binding arbitration, and then it becomes a binding. And you make that individual that you both agree on the ruling judge in that case only. When that case is over, he's no longer the ruling judge. This is the way the courts operated in Judea and Israel before the king. And who was usually the arbitrator judge of these disputes is usually a Levite. It was usually one of the ministers because he was well respected. How did he become a minister? I mean, how did Levites become ministers of individual congregations of people? People chose them. They weren't appointed from the top down. They were chosen. And if you were a Levite and nobody chose you, you were out of business. Nobody was going to tithe to you because you weren't doing a good job. That's why it says tithe to them according to their service. If he doesn't do a good job, don't tithe to him. He can't kick in your door and say, well, hey, you know, I'm a Levite. You got to pay me. No, you're not my Levite. Get away from me. This is a government of freedom. And so, okay, now we're getting to the network thing. And I'm going to go back and touch on Holy Matrimony 2 again and this idea of rites and rituals and canon law. But in the network, now, anybody can go and sign up for the Kingdom News List. When you do that, within a certain period of time, you should get another email if all the software is working, that says you can sign up for a local network. Now, somebody this morning tried to sign up for a local network, and he hasn't signed up for the Kingdom News List. And so, therefore, he's not really eligible to sign up for the local network until he signs up for the Kingdom News List. Now, I'm not being mean or autocratic on this. The reality is he will not get certain notices if he's not signed up to the Kingdom News List, because we send out notices based on what state you are in, which will be the basis of your membership in the network. And if you're not a member of the Kingdom News List, you will not get those notices. So you need to be a member of the Kingdom News List, then join the local network. Very important. Or you will miss information and notices, etc., when they come out. Okay, in the network, in order to, and you can go and see a Google map we have, and you see all these little dots, and they're not even half the dots. There's all kinds more I have to enter into there, but I just have to get the time to do it, because it has to be done manually. But the point is there are people all over. Now, you want to know who this is, and you see little, like, initials there, MB or whoever. Those are representing certain people, and the people can go there and say, oh, yeah, that's me. I know that that's me. But everybody else don't know who that is in Las Vegas or in Los Angeles or whatever. But they know there's somebody there. And in order to find out, they have to join the network. In order to join the network, they have to join the Kingdom News List. Okay, when you join the network, you still can't just find out. You have to find out because of the fact he has to introduce himself on the email group. You have to find out through your local contact minister. Well, who's your local contact minister? Well, who do you want? This, we're talking about freedom. We're talking about liberty. You have to decide who you want as your local contact minister. Now, say you've got 20 people. Like, we got over 20 people in Texas that are on this list, and those people know other people, so, you know, they may be representing, you know, 100, 200 people in Texas. They're just the email individual on the group. So how many contact ministers do we have in Texas? Well, that's up to them. If you only need two people that say, I want this guy to be my contact minister, and he can become a contact minister if he's willing to put up some information, and we will put his spot on the map. You'll be able to click on that. Little balloon will pop up, and it'll give you his picture or his name or his email address or what have you. That will pop up, and you will be able to contact him and or her, and they will say, okay, well, where are you? And I'm here. And is there anybody? Yeah, well, we have somebody in that area. How can I get a hold of you? And they'll give a number, or they'll say, meet at Denny's for tea or whatever. You know, or they'll say, well, just give them my number. Have them call me. But it's on a controlled, filtered basis, because we actually have human beings, or let's say, people, individuals, if you don't like the word human being, I understand, who are filtering and watching this. And we know, you know, who is coming on the group that might be a sociopath and might be a guy you don't want to have to deal with, or whatever. It's people looking out for other people. It's people watching each other's back. It's people helping each other out. If you're not doing that, you can't just get on Facebook and think that you're a congregation. It gives you the feeling of community without ever actually forming a community. It's a virtual community. It's not a real community. And the early church and what we need to do has to be a real community. So we're going back to canon law. Canon law is someone's opinion of what is right. Canon law, by definition, is supposed to be divine will. When people write it down, they may get it right, they may get it wrong. That's why there's lots of different lists of canon law. Some of them all have some of the basics, but they get into complexities sometimes that are really outside the venue of true Christianity. But we can look at canon law and look at it, but it doesn't bind you. It's simply trying to communicate to you, again with those symbols and ideas, what divine will is. And it's some man's attempt to write it down. Usually groups of men put together a canon law. But it's not like statutory law where you're bound and somebody else is going to interpret whether or not you're keeping that rule or law and punish you if you are not. It's not the way canon law works. The canon law is just somebody writing down what they believe to be divine will. And then it's still subject to individual interpretation as to what that individual is saying about divine will. Now, divine will is not subject to individual interpretation. That is what it is. But when we talk about it, we're working out our salvation with fear and trembling. So the rites and rituals in most churches involve putting them under the authority of the state. The ministers actually go down and get permission to perform one of these state function marriages, and you talk about the church being separate from the state. Well, not when they're doing that. And they're actually bringing the people into bondage of men they don't even know. They're already bound under the judges of courts they have not even seen. They are going under authority when they sign up for these contracts. And marriage is a good example of one of those contracts with those God's many. Now, the rites and rituals of His Holy Church don't do that because they're serving a kingdom that's not a part of that world. So they would not be binding you to that world, that constitutional order or system of state. Now, if you wish to bind yourself, that's up to you. But the church is not going to play a role in that because it's His Holy Church. That's a descriptive term. It's not a proper name. It's His holy ecclesia. It's His separate ecclesia. It's the ecclesia of Jesus Christ, the ones He's called out. Now, am I a part of that? Well, you'll have to decide that. If our ministers that are associating with us are a part of that, you have to decide whether they're His holy church or not. Now, if you decide they're not and they are, they still are. Because ultimately Christ decides who His holy church is. We're just trying to conform to Christ and show other people how to conform to Christ according to what we see, according to our vision of divine will. We're not binding you. You can't become a member of the church by becoming a member of a congregation. That you're just publicly saying, I'm a part of this group, and that's what you're doing on the Texas group or the Indiana group or the Wisconsin group or the Michigan group or the California group. Two or more people gather together and say, we recognize this guy as our only contact minister. That's it. You can only have, individuals can have only one contact minister. You have to have at least two individuals that recognize him as a contact minister. He has to consent to becoming that contact minister, and then give us some sort of evidence that he has at least two people. If they want to re-vote again, they can say, okay, I don't want this guy as my contact minister. I want a different guy as my contact minister. They can do that anytime they want. If he doesn't have two people that want him to be a contact minister, then he's out of the running. He's not a contact minister anymore. And he will be taken down as a contact minister. If he only has one individual, that's not enough. You have to have two or more. Everything has to be established by two or more witnesses. That's a biblical concept. Goes way back to the Old Testament and is seen in the New Testament. So that's the way that works. It's not a democracy. You're not voting for it and it's closed voting and you have to wait 6 months to either vote again or any of these things. Those are ideas in the governments of the world. That's not ideas in Christianity. You're walking day by day in the liberty of Christ. But you need to actually take that walk. You need to actually choose someone to be your contact minister. And then he will get access to other contact ministers and therefore access to their information. He won't get direct access. He gets access through the network. And he can't go and say, okay, well, who's all the people and where do they live that's a part of your contact ministry? No, he can only go to that contact minister and say, well, who do you have in Pensacola? Because that guy may be, they may be both in Florida, but one's in Pensacola. Now, people everywhere have relatives everywhere, friends everywhere. And so the more people you bring into the network, the closer you come to knowing everybody else, or at least connected to everybody else. Now, this could snowball if you work at it, but every individual has to work at it and make their rituals and ceremonies to set other men free. Learn to love not only those in your group, but those who are not in your group yet. Seek the kingdom of God and God's righteousness. Till we meet again, peace be upon your house, and God be with you.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.